ganz kurz. Bitte denken Sie daran, es wäre schön, dass Sie uns Feedback geben in der App, über die Session, auch über die Veranstaltung. Carsten Weidmann wird anschließend bei uns in der Microsoft Launch sein, um Fragen zu beantworten oder, viel wichtiger, am Stand, also wenn Sie hier rausgehen, einfach einmal links und immer geradeaus, korrekt. Auf der linken Seite dann ist der Stand von Exasol für weitere Fragen und Diskussionen. So, let's switch to English. Carsten, welcome here on stage. In this session, you will show us Exasol, a high-performance analytic database on Azure, and how fast and quick you show us how fast and quick you can run up is on Azure, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so please welcome Carsten here on stage and enjoy your session.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. I hope everybody can understand me well. So as we're streaming on Channel 9, I'm using English as my language, but nevertheless, if you have questions later, we can also discuss that in German. So high-performance analytics platform on Azure with Exasol. What's today's session all about? What we're going to do in the next 45 minutes is I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Exasol, maybe something you're not all very familiar with. And at the same time, we're going to use it on Azure, set it up on Azure, and then start using it, just like you would like to have any analytics platform on Azure to be usable in a quick and very easy way. But to start with, what is Exasol? Exasol is a high-performance MPP in-memory database for analytics. Lots of buzzwords in there. So let's look a little bit more deeper into the what's in there exactly. So first of all, it's an MPP shared nothing architecture. That means it's a database that usually runs on a cluster of servers, be it physical, be it virtual like in Azure, be it virtual machines in your own data center independent. It's a shared nothing architecture. That is, we have a database that stores the data in disjunct manners across the different servers in order to better use the capacity that we have there, in order to better parallelize and thus have a better performance and execution. Second, as we are a relational database management system, we're fully ACID compliant. We have to be ACID, atomicity, isolation, consistency and durability. That is, when you commit a transaction, we store the data. There's in-memory up there, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that, what exactly in-memory means from our standpoint and what in-memory does not mean. In-memory does not mean that once you lose power, have a power failure, for example, all your data is lost. As I said, we're ACID compliant, data is stored on disk. The intelligent in-memory solution that we have, basically what we did is, when you look at traditional database management systems, SQL Server, the original one, Oracle, DB2, MySQL, Postgres, whatever relational database management system you choose, their approach typically was, we start with the disk where we store the records. And then when we have a query, we load that data from disk into memory and start analyzing it. That is, usually we transform that data in some other structures in order to better analyze that data, to better read it, to better write it, whatever, and then if we write data, push it back down to disk. We took the approach to basically turn the view 180 degrees and say, okay, let's look at the situation. What if we had unlimited amount of memory? How would the data structures that we use for querying data need to look like? What could we use, what could we implement in order to have the best performance if we had unlimited memory? And that's how we then started developing. But as unlimited memory is still a dream, although back 15 years ago when we started, it was even a bigger dream because at that time, the gigabytes weren't really that common yet, and terabytes not even on the horizon at the time. So when you don't have unlimited memory, what you need to do, of course, you have to provide some sort of capability in order to, when you run out of memory, you need to have something else where you can look at. When you look at your traditional operating system on your laptop, on your desktop, what does it do? It starts swapping, right? So the physical memory is not the limit, usually, when you run your Windows laptop. As soon as if you have too many applications open that the memory can take, the system starts swapping. And that's basically what the database does too, but in a more intelligent way, as we just have a very narrow application scenario where we need to swap data in and out to disk. And thus, memory is not the limit for us, but the more memory we have, the better it is for analyzing your data. Second, we use a column store. We have a clear focus on analytics. We can be used, could theoretically be used for transactional systems, but you wouldn't really be happy with that. In analytics, you usually start looking at your data not at the full table, but at certain columns in the table. So a column store helps you process less data because you just need to pull in the columns that you're actually looking at. And secondly, a column store helps you compress data because within the column you have a unique data type. You can select a dedicated compression algorithm per data type, and thus make sure that you even get more data in your memory using compression, but at the same time, having a compression algorithm that doesn't hurt your performance, which is very important for us. So you won't see compression ratios like 1 to 100 or others that others are maybe telling you you could achieve. But we say we need compression, we want to apply compression. If it's 1 to 5, that's already very good. It's always that balance between performance and compression ratio. Next is we run on standard x86 64-bit hardware or virtual machines. Nothing special here. We use standard SQL, ANSI SQL 92, and whatever comes after that, we support that. Be it the ordinary syntax, be it a SQL syntax with square brackets for your identifiers, whatever, we support that. And that's how you query the data. And then, as an addition, we also support in database analytics with additional programming languages like R, like Python, like Java, but also if you like C++, Scala, Julia, whatever programming language you would like to use for analyzing data in your database. That is, we bring the code to the data and not the data to the code, which also then again enhances your performance. We'll look a little bit more into that at a later slide. We're extremely scalable. An MPP shared nothing architecture is easily, you can easily scale it out. Whenever you need more performance, whenever you need more capacity, just add another server to it. Be it 10, be it 20, 100, we don't care. It all works. And thus, with all that CPU power available, of course, we also support high concurrency. And then one of the very big things that we were looking at and that we thought were very important also in daily usage of our product is it had to be easy to administer and easy to use. Not much DBA effort going in there in order to tune it. Not much administration effort going in there in order, for example, when you start to scale out of the system. Just database knows best what to do itself, and the tuning amount of tuning is kept to a minimum. So that's what we call the world's fastest analytics database. Why we call it world's fastest, I'll show you in a minute. That just works. Okay, so now we covered the product, but who are we actually? We are a company from Germany, located in Nuremberg, the beautiful city in Franconia. Please don't say it's in Bavaria, it's in Franconia, otherwise you'll get into trouble in Nuremberg. I'm not a local, so I can say that. It's a privately funded company. We're on the market since 2000. We initially developed the product as a warehouse accelerator, something that sits on top of an existing database and makes performance faster, but then realized that this is just not enough, that we need to implement a full relational database management system, which we did. Our first customer started using it in 2006. Just to give you an idea of the maturity of the product, this is not something just that started 2 years ago or something like that. We've been on the market for 10 years now, or we had productive customers for 10 years now. It's a matured product. Version 6 is just around the corner. And as we are a German company, we have that German engineering saying, we work to the highest standards, but also whatever we show on a PowerPoint is actually there. It's not a vaporware, which we're going to see in a second. what I want to do now is I've set up or provisioned an instance in Azure. So let me just switch over to Azure. I've just selected a machine where I want to run Exasol on. Just to give you an idea, you can find us on the marketplace easily if you just search for Exasol. We're there as an analytics database. You get some information on that, and you can initially start creating that. I already did that because it takes a couple minutes until the machine is ready for the final setup. So let me just switch back to that machine. This is basically the state you get after you have provisioned that in Azure. And the next step will be to trigger the setup of the database itself, which is just by calling this IP you see here, which I did here, where you have to provide two passwords. The first one is for the system administration, and the second one is for the database administration. That's basically it, so let me just type that in, and then we will... Okay. In this configuration, I'm just using the temporary storage that comes with the virtual machine. Nothing fancy. Of course, you can attach any disk configuration you would like to. I just chose for quicker... okay. Yeah, I lost my... Sorry. I had this page open for too long. Okay, so now what's going to happen is the software is being installed, the database is going to be initialized, and at the end we'll have a running system that we can then use. So while that's happening, let me just give you a little more insights on who we are and what we do. As you can see, it's very tiny, I know. In the Gartner Magic Quadrant, we are still a niche player. One of the reasons being, for sure, is we're a German company. We do have a subsidiary in UK. We have customers worldwide, also in the US and et cetera. But we still have a very heavy focus on the DACH area, German, Austria, Switzerland. And that's why we, in the ability to execute, basically put into that niche. And the completeness of vision, we're just selling one product, and that's the database. That's what we're good at. We have no BI front end. We have no ETL tool. Whatever we try to integrate, or our key vision is to integrate in all those tools as best as possible. But we'll stick to our core competency, the database, and improve that. And Gartner was nice enough to say that we are a prime example of what they consider to be a future DBMS. The world's fastest database, I told you in an earlier slide. There's one benchmark, one official independent benchmark out there that compares analytical databases or databases in analytical scenarios. It's called the TPCH. The TPC, that's the Transaction Processing and Performance Council. It's all vendors are in there, and so HP, Microsoft, IBM, Oracle, you name it, and they define benchmarks for different scenarios, the TPCH being the analytical scenario. We participated in that benchmark actually three times. 2007 was the first time where we beat every existing database at that time. The two results you see here in green are the ones from 2011 and 2014. We're still number one in every category. They divide the category according to a data volume, so that's what you see in the bottom, 100 gigabytes starting on the left with 100 gigabyte up to 100 terabyte on the right. The gray ones are our main competitors, or the competitors that scored second in that category. Just, of course, it's a benchmark. Whatever we recommend is, that's just an indication. go and try it with your own data in your own scenario to see whether the performance is there or not. And we believe it is. The whole package basically looks like it's the relational database management system, which can pull in from different sources, be it a Hadoop cluster, and I'll show you custom examples that do that, be it some standard ERP system, just a operational database management system, be it sensor data, click streams, whatever. We can pull all that data in. We have a physical storage layer at the bottom that is works cluster-wide, just to make sure whenever you have a hardware failure, your data isn't lost, but still there. And on top of the database, we basically provide you a full set of functions, of functionalities that enhance your analysis, be it just standard SQL, be it the integration of R, Python, Java, Lua, and more, be it in form of the Skyline algorithm, Skyline being something very unique. We developed that with the University of Augsburg, which is, for example, when you go on vacation and you want to have a hotel with the best price but very close to the beach. And then you look at the results you get. So you can have all the results put on in two dimensions, distance to the beach, price, right? And you try to find the optimum. The Skyline algorithm helps you do that. Basically, it draws the line, or it selects all those hotels that best fit in the correlation price to distance to the beach, as an example. It's a very powerful algorithm that we have in the database. And of course, we also provide geospatial functionalities so that you can analyze your geospatial data. On top of that, we have a full range of applications that not we provide, but that you usually already use or other vendors provide, where we seamlessly integrate in. Be it that you want to use SSAS with Exasol, not predefined or not having physical cubes, but just virtual ones, accessing the database, not an issue. Or just reporting services, just an ODBC connection. Be it tools like Business Objects, Cognos, MicroStrategy, Power BI is a little bit in brackets because there's not a direct query connector yet for Power BI. We have that. There's somebody asked for that. You can upvote it if you want to on the Power BI site. But otherwise, all tools seamlessly integrate and you can make full use of that and analyze your data with our cutting edge technology. So, a little bit more about that algorithms or advanced in database analytics with the different programming languages. The reason why you see here mainly Java, R, Python, and Lua is those were the first ones we integrated. With version 6, we now extended that you can use any programming language you would like to develop an algorithm or functionality that runs inside the database directly within the SQL execution, as you can see in the bottom. You deploy the UDF, there's no pointer here, directly execute within the SQL execution plan. Also parallelized across all nodes, also parallelized across all the cores that you have available in the cluster. This allows you, for example, to use when you're using R for your analytics, develop your algorithms with R Studio, then deploy it into the database and use it there directly on the data without the need to pull out the data from the database and then do your analysis on some other machine, but have it run inside the database with all the performance and capacity available there. We also offer that, as we say, any analytical programming language. It's not only limited to analytical, because I wouldn't call C++ an analytical programming language, but nevertheless, we have people that actually want to develop algorithms in C++, so they can do that. You can also do that with different versions of the programming language. So you could run Python 2 and 3, for example, in parallel. Not an issue. All works within the new version of Exasol. Okay, the next big feature that we're just about to launch is the logical data warehouse. Imagine, usually you have your source systems and you have your data warehouse or your analytics platform, whatever you call it. What you usually have to do is you have to look at the source data, then pull in that structure and the data into your analytics platform, and then you can start analyzing it. It's hard to do unless you're using a third-party tool is basically to look at both data stores at the same time in combination. And that's what we do with virtual schemas. You basically integrate your operational data sources, be it a relational database or whatever other source you have that can somehow be represented in a relational way, that is, as a table with some columns, into Exasol. Looking at Exasol, you see those virtual schemas just as schemas like they would be in the database. You can run queries across your analytics platform that include data of those remote databases in one query, very seamlessly. I wouldn't necessarily use it in production because, of course, accessing the remote databases will cost you performance. But when you start thinking of the layout of your data warehouse, of your analytical platform, this can be a very big help in order to initially get the big picture, just from one point of view, and then start building up your processes from there. We're smart enough to know what source system we have, unless you have a very fancy one, so that we optimize, or our optimizer also sends just the parts of the query that actually need to be executed on the source system down there, let it execute there, and then integrate the result it gets from there in its own query plan and finish the execution. And very important, you always have live data. There's no data latency, because as you live access those systems, you can easily work with everything you have in there and see what's working and what not. And no data duplication, basically. Okay, so lots of technology for now. Who's actually using it? The big logo slide that probably every vendor has, I just brought it with me as well, just to show you some of the many names. And we have many more that we're not allowed to show to the logos. For example, Adidas is one of our customers that also uses Exasol, and many other that maybe not be on here. But I want to focus, just to give you an impression on what the scenarios are, what it can be used for, with the following three examples. The first one is Zalando. Probably everybody in here knows Zalando. Zalando has one of their problems is, and there has been lots of talk about it, that customers, you know, just shop and shop, get the goods delivered, and then send back 50%, 80%. So what do you do with your on stock? How much shoes, how much clothes do you keep in stock? How do you know how much is coming back? In order to optimize that, for example, that's one of the scenarios they're using Exasol for. They have an Oracle data warehouse where we sit on top as an analytical layer. Basically, they use us to develop the algorithms to optimize their knowledge on what good will probably be returned, so what do I have to keep in stock and what not, because it'll be here in 2 days, because the client who bought that will send it back anyway. So we don't need to have it in stock, or maybe just at a lower rate. So that's the stock availability, and of course, they also do cart analysis with us, just to see who's buying what in general, is there a pattern in there, and thus also powering the product recommendation platform that they're using. Database size is approximately 15 terabytes. Next one is a completely different scenario. WebTrack, German company based in Berlin, does web analytics for about 30,000 domains. They have some big names and also some small names. Basically, we are the analytical platform for their online analytics. They have basically a continuous click stream loading into the database from their different domains, and they can initially or at real time start analyzing it. They keep the data not forever. That depends on the customer how much he pays. 6 months, 12 months, maybe online shops want to keep it for 14 months just to do a what was last year compared to this year analysis. But it's a continuous loading, so there's no pause, and we have to be online 24/7. If there's a failure, then they would run in trouble. But with the mechanisms we provide, they can have that. Data volume, approximately 300 terabyte, depending a little bit, but that's roughly the size. Next one is probably, who of you played or heard of Candy Crush Saga on a phone? Okay, a couple. King is the maker of that game and many others. They had in 2015, and numbers haven't changed much to my knowledge, about 500 million active users on their games, which is more than the US population. What they started with in the very early years, that it was 2013, 2014, with a Hadoop cluster of about 1 petabyte, very important, King does not delete data. King keeps all data. And if you've ever wondered when you played Candy Crush Saga, why all of a sudden you can finish a level that you were trying 20 times, 25 times, whatever, it's because of the data they collect. Because of what they then do through the gameplay in order to keep you happy, in order to keep you using their games. So they collect all the data, store that in a Hadoop cluster. That was back in 2013, 14, where they had 1 petabyte, and at that time only 149 million, so you can see the growth of that data, and a terabyte, about 100 terabyte database. Now, they want to make us, now we're currently running on 64 servers at their site. They now have 8 petabytes of data in their Hadoop cluster, and they're thinking about putting 0.8 petabyte, that is 800 terabytes, into Exasol. Just so you can see, it's this example is meant to be an example for you can see we can cope with large data volumes without an issue. They use us for ad hoc analysis, self-service BI, just whatever data they need, they pull into Exasol from their Hadoop cluster and then run the queries there. Okay, so I hope the setup is complete. So why don't we have a look at it, how it works in Exasol. This is what you get when the setup is complete. This is the logging screen to our system administration console. But before we go in there, I could log in now with the password I just provided for sysadmin. One thing that we have to do before we can actually start using it, initially on Azure, this instance only opens up the HTTP ports 80 and 443, but not the port that we need for the database to be accessible. So let me just go into the network interfaces. As we can see, that's our public IP. That's what we're going to use now when we use the database. And network security group. And here, as you can see, we have inbound security roles, HTTPS and SSH, sorry. So what we need to add here is a port for, let's call it Exasol. And the port is 8563. We allow, okay. So from this moment on, the database we just created that is or should be running, okay, will it update? Yes. The database is now accessible and we can actually start using it. In order to do so, I'm just going to launch the Exa Plus client, which is the only basically client tool that we have, which is a simple SQL editor where you can just type in queries and run. Everything else can be found on our user portal when you go to our website, and the link is also in the Azure store. We have our user portal where you can download all drivers. You don't need to log in. You just can download anything we have in there, manual, ask questions for that. You need to log in. And you can also download a free trial of Exasol. This trial goes up to 200 gigabytes of RAM. It's only limited to a single node. If you want to, you can use it in production. It's community supported and runs in a virtual machine. It's a virtual machine image. You can just download and install on your laptop or use the Azure, whatever you want. So in clients, drivers, and more, in that section, you then find the Exa Plus client, the ODBC driver, JDBC, Edu.net, whatever you need to run your applications. So in order to connect to the database, as you can see, I just prepared some scripts. What I'm going to do now is connect to the database first, then create some tables in there. As an example, I chose the flight stats. That's a public available data set you can download. Basically, it has a record on every flight in the US, what delay it had, how long it took to taxi from the gate to takeoff, how long it took from landing to taxi to the gate, and all that stuff, how late, or was it early or late on departure, was it early or late on arrival. A little data set, not too much, not too fancy. The reason for using that is that it provides a nice scenario for just some little analysis. I couldn't pump up terabytes here through, that would take too long, as you can imagine. So I just prepared that as a quick example on how easy it is to use Exasol and then start with your own stuff. Okay, so just to recap, we need our IP address, which is, we can close that. And we can close that. That's the resource group, we can close that as well, but it's 40 basically. Let me just capture it here, do a copy paste. So we do a custom connection. We have our IP address. We have the user sys. That's the DBA. And the password I put in there, that's basically the one that I just provided. If I don't mistype it. I hope I didn't have any pretty typo. OK, so we're connected to the database. It's up and running. And now we can just start working with it. Within Exasol, everything is organized in schemas. For those of you who are familiar, for example, also with Oracle, it's basically similar, except for that we don't have that tight connection between user and schema. A schema can exist without a user, or a user can exist without a schema. You can assign a schema to a role, and et cetera. So there's not this tight integration between user and schema. And let me just run this DDL. As you can see, it's a very simple data model. There's some basically lookup tables. I decided not to type too much and then use just the like command to create similar tables just with a different name because they all have code and description in there. And then further down, we have one big fact table. As you can see, it's rather wide. They put quite some information in there. It's also, when you get the data, it's already denormalized. So actually, the dimensions that we have up there, we wouldn't necessarily need them in most of the cases. But nevertheless, let me just run that script. I do not define any indexes in there. Index creation, I leave that to the database. The database itself is smart enough to realize what index do I need when running a certain query. If an index might be helpful for the database to run a query, it will create that index on the fly. It will persist it. It will update it when you load new data in there, so the index is there. If you don't use that index anymore, because that was just a one-time query and never used again, this index will also be dropped and removed. So we don't run into those scenarios where we have 40% data volume and 60% index volumes. Because, of course, it's a human nature. You never delete something because it could be used someplace, right? So you just start creating new indexes but never delete ones. The database takes care of that by itself. Next, I'm just going to push in some data. As you can see from the path, it's located on my laptop. It's in here, so I have some CSV files. Those are the files with the dimension data. And then further below, I hope you can read it, it's a gzip file. I gzipped it because with Bash on Windows 10, that's very quickly be done. The database supports reading from gzipped CSV files or zipped CSV files or bzip2, just to have a lower impact on the bandwidth we're using. So that's the data we're just going to bulk load in there. So I'm just going to run that script for the dimensions. And as a last step, as that's done, import those 12 files. So that is all data from 2015 that I'm going to load. And takes a little, approximately a minute. We should be good with that. Yeah. It's not that many rows, as you can see. It's about, in total, 6 million, but we'll take a closer look at that in a second. So loading data from local CSV files is one option. What we can also do is we can connect to any database, be it a SQL Server, Oracle DB2, whatever, and import directly from there. That is, we open up the connection, or a database will open up a connection to that database and import the data that it finds there, be it a full table or be it the result set of a select statement that you execute on that source system and pull it in into Exasol. Good. All data is in. So why don't we just look at some of that? Let me just initially, I hope you can read it. As I said, it's not that many rows. It's just 5.8, close to 6 million rows. When we look at the table, though, we will see that it's just an extract, the first 10 rows of the table. As we can see, it's a very wide table, lots of information in there. Diff airport, diverted airport, and so on and so on. Delay groups. This here, wheels off, wheels on. So when was a touchdown? When did the plane take off? Taxi in, basically showing here 7 minutes to taxi from touchdown to the gate. And the other taxi out is pushback from gate until we have the liftoff, wheels liftoff. Okay, so why don't we look at something like the top 10 airports in the US with the most flights for 2015. And we can see here, Atlanta had 379,424 flights in that year, closely followed by O'Hare, and then Dallas, Denver. So, not that bad. As we have delays in there, and that's what when you want to look at, maybe we can just look at, and maybe the month has an influence. One would probably suspect that when we look at the monthly delays and departures, what this here gives us, the first column is the month. The second one is the minimum delay on departure. And as you can see, it's a negative number. That means that flight left early. I was a little bit surprised to see a flight leaving 82 minutes early. I mean, you get to the gate on time and you say, well, the plane left an hour ago. We're sorry. that's in there. And it's an official flight data. Why don't we look at some of that and see what kind of flight was that left so early? We can see here that's from Attic Island to Anchorage. I would assume that's just some sort of private pilot, and whenever you get there, the plane leaves. Maybe it was scheduled for noon, you already got there at 11. Okay, well then let's take off. So that's the 82-minute early flight. Yeah. Okay. Another thing that we can look at maybe is actually, I somehow made a mistake in here. Let's just skip that query. Okay. What this looks at is basically what flight or what connection, not flight number or airline, but what connection has the most delays. I would have assumed it's somewhere in the north because of weather or anything. It's actually from San Francisco to Los Angeles where you have the most delayed flights, interestingly. They had delayed arrival, they had 15,000 flights, and of those 15,000, 6,900 were late. 2,000 of them were even starting later, but they could catch up a little bit, reduce the delay. Actually, of the ones that started late, 2,000 came in on time, so the delay probably wasn't that much. And if you'd use the Deutsche Bahn metrics that everything within 5 minutes is not a delay, this number would probably come down much more as they count the exact minute when the plane leaves the gate. But also, actually, 4,400 flights, the delay got worse. So this is some nice information that you can pull out of here, just so next time you fly from San Francisco to Los Angeles, be aware that there could be a delay. Next, of course, what we can also look at, what reason flights were canceled. Of course, weather is number one. That's what probably everybody would expect. Number two is the carrier. And then number three and four, I don't know what the national air system is, probably something broke. But nevertheless, 15,000 flights were canceled due to that. Not bad. And then we can, of course, also look at the weather. Of course, one would expect, especially around winter. So the first four entries make sense. March, January, February, and December. And in June, we somehow have lots of failures due to carrier and weather. Also very interesting. But it could also be that's due to 2015. What would be very good is if we could correlate that to any event that happened, for example, in June 2015. In the U.S., why they had this situation there. Okay, and then just as a quick last demo, the taxi time. So this is taxi out. That means in LaGuardia, when you push back from the gate, plane pushes back, it'll take you 26 minutes until you have liftoff. So you'd be grounded for a long time. Probably waiting in queue, so New York is not a good place flying from, as you do a lot of taxiing there. And the other thing, of course, we can also look is, so what about taxiing in? So arriving, and that looks not too bad. You know, in Chicago or here, probably depending on what gate you arrive, you have to taxi for a longer time, wherever you land and then taxi. But 30 minutes, that's okay, and then it quickly goes down. 8 minutes, and so on. Good. This is basically what I wanted to show you, how quickly and easy we can set up Exosol on Azure, how quickly and easily we can use it. I just loaded CSV files from my laptop. Those CSV files are public domain. You can download them. There are many other data sets. If you just want to play around, you don't know how to get that data volume. Another good set is the New York taxi, where you have where was a person picked up, where was it, to where did it go, how much was the fee, how much tip was given, how many persons were in the taxi, and all that. Analyzing the yellow cabs that everybody knows from New York, but there's also the green cabs that run outside Manhattan, and then also the Uber. And all that other data. That's also a nice data set to play around with. I didn't use that here because that's a little bit more in volume. Thus, the loading times would have been much longer. Therefore, I decided not to use it. With this, I want to thank you very much for joining this session. I hope I could give you some interesting insights. Whenever you have questions, as Kai mentioned, our booth is just that way at the end. When you go out, turn left, you'll see us there, booth 19. Or if you visit www.exosol.com, you'll find all the information there as well. As I said, we're on Azure. You can quickly find us there. Or if you would want to try it out on your own laptop, if you don't have an internet connection, you can also download it from our website and then start using it and have fun with it. Thank you very much. Enjoy your afternoon.